Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
You are now listening to the Black Tech Matters podcast, and we're bringing you the most exclusive and profound conversations surrounding black people in technology. We're talking everything black tech, science, business, mental health, finance, and fitness. And now let's get into the show.
Black Tech Matters, episode 6. I have my boy here, Jeremy Quant, the founder of Dot Red, and social audio platform for visual art. Dot Red will allow people to go on his platform, view art, purchase art, discuss art. And I think art is something that's really undervalued right now in our community. I think we should invest more in art. We should support artists more. I see that, you know, Basquiat and certain other artists, Andre Gichard in Chicago, and other artists that I've came across, their art gallery presentations that I've been to are actually really great and cool events. It's like free wine, free hors d'oeuvres, and artists and art presenting their works of art and their sculptures and their paintings. And I've always enjoyed myself at art shows and art gatherings and art festivals. And when I met Jeremy through Founder Gym, I actually, you know, started talking to him because I was interested in what he was doing. And I decided to bring him on today. And Jeremy, just kind of introduce yourself and what you got going and how everything is developing with Dot Red.
Cool. Well, thank you, Charles, and thank you for bringing me on. Definitely excited to have conversations with you. We always have good talks and good conversations that that go much deeper beyond the surface level of really just what we see, what's going on, and really what we need to progress in our own personal, mental, you know, business spaces. And so thank you again. Yeah, so Jeremy Quant, I have a company called Dot Red. Yeah, we promote artists, galleries, and museums, and showcasing visual, virtual art exhibitions, full scale exhibitions, and we have been working in the fine art space for about seven, 8 years, and now just as a result of the last about a year and a half, we've been in development for a virtual platform. Prior to that, we were a tourism business, and we took people to art galleries, museums, artist studios, and showcase work. And so yeah, man. So where we're at, we finished our prototype, and we showcased it at, this was pre-COVID. We showcased it at an art fair. One that we have a partnership with here in Los Angeles, and it went well, was well received, and then COVID hit, and we really had to pivot because we didn't have a lot of funds, and we ended up losing some of our team members, and so I picked up the ball because I also do web development, front end web development, and so we developed the site along with some other folks, and really produced our first show with the gallery that was looking to find solutions for an online place to showcase work that gave more of an in-depth look at the arc, more so than just an art piece, just a JPEG, you know, on a website. And so we had interviews with the artists, with the curators, with the gallery owner, and they were all audio interviews, pre-recorded, and then we posted that on the site and use that to engage our audience. And so far, you know, we've done another show. We have a political art exhibition up right now.
Nice.
And we've rebuilt some of our team members, our advisors, and I'm excited that, you know, that we feel back in the game and are looking to grow.
Great, man. So yeah, political art is like really just art imitating life right now, because everybody's concerned with social issues, politics. And I know that art speaks to a lot of different people. And, you know, I think that it's a great thing that you kind of segmenting this political show to kind of speak to people based on what's going on in society right now. And COVID, you guys basically had a proof of concept that COVID probably accelerated You know, it's like you guys were saying we're trying to do a virtual art show, and then COVID hit, and it's almost like people have to do virtual art shows in most cities because you can't have gatherings of more than X amount of people, depending on what the local or state municipality mandates. But I was just interested in what you were doing because, like I said, I just think that the same way we look at sneakers, the same way we look at property, the same, you know, art can be insured. Art can be, I know somebody whose dad was a famous artist. I forgot his name, but he passed away and she inherited all his art and she was able to sell some. Of course, she kept some. I just think, like I said, art is an undervalued sector in our community, and the fact that you're using technology to broaden it, right? Are you guys working with like schools or colleges to kind of get kids involved, or is it just mostly business to business?
Yeah, that's a good question. So funny enough, you know, prior to, again, pre-COVID, when we were doing tours, we also were doing arts education tours and wanted, was going to actually do a quite a large RFP with the LA Unified School District. Unfortunately, we needed a couple pieces to finish the puzzle of doing a full RFP. Mm-hmm. We still have the relationship. And so now that we've gone, you know, a little bit beyond our proof of concept and now are promoting the show and working with galleries, we want to re-engage with the education system. LA Unified is actually one of the second largest school districts in the United States. And then offer this as a solution for teachers who want to showcase art to their students. And these are just not just artists who are dead, but artists that are living, you know, artists that is today, and showing artists that look like them. And so we are looking to re-engage that and find ways that we can have a partnership with LA Unified and schools to share these experiences.
That's great, because I think our kids need to understand that art is not only a way of expressing yourself, not even creating art, but the art that you buy, but also it's an asset class, right? And so one thing for sure is every artist is going to eventually die, but their art is valuable while they're alive and is even more valuable sometime once they pass away. And I just think that, like I said, the school system needs to retool how they view art class, even in college. Like I took an art class in college and I learned about historical art and abstract art and all these different types of art, but they never explain why you need to have art in your house, why you need to insure your art, why you need to pass art down as an inheritance, why you need to understand the business of art, and why art helps you become more cultured. Just going to art galleries and talking to artists and explaining, you know, listen to the artists explain what their inspiration was for whatever particular piece of art that they created. And I just, you know, I think that you guys are going to probably be at the forefront of changing how certain communities, specifically ours, the Black community, and other communities too, because your service doesn't have to be exclusive to us. It's just that, you know, certain cultures already expose their children to the creative side of art and the business side of art before us. And I just think that, like my son, you know, once he becomes a certain age, I'm going to be introducing him to art, not just if he wants to be an artist himself, but like, this is a piece that I don't want you to sell. I'm not going to sell it. I want you to inherit this piece. And this is what it's about. This is why the artist created it. And this is why the value is there. Mm-hmm. And if he gets that same reinforcement from school, then, you know, it's going to be like, he'll be prepared to understand when he starts buying his own pieces as he gets older and moves forward in life.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely touched on some really key pieces of why, you know, we are inherently doing this, and the importance of art, not only as an asset, but just art in and of itself. And, you know, art has always been this, like, sometimes a thorn in someone's thigh with the education system, and is always usually the first to go. But as we're seeing more these days, the creative economy produces about 1/6 of the total GDP in the United States.
Wow.
Meaning like creatives, I mean, and it goes beyond just the visual aspect. You know, this is also in film. These are musicians, but the creative economy produces a lot of economic stability for the U.S. and it's growing. And so what that's telling us is that we are moving from different systems of economic progress into spaces that have to be much more creatively driven. You think about automation. I mean, we have technology that's giving us such a leverage on things that we used to have to work really hard to do. And so in the job market, those jobs are being taken out, you know, because there's like automation. We have more of a demand on being creative because it's the creativity that's going to give us longevity. It's being able to come up with new ways to put something together that benefits those as a whole, form and function. And so I see art beyond just, okay, well, it's creative. This is actually a core aspect of life that people need to understand and grasp a hold of. Art has so much to do, not just creatively, but it's critical thinking. You know, we have a lot of folks out here who don't really use what's in front of them to move forward. Looking at different ways to put something together, spatial thought. And so, having conversations around art does a couple things. It breaks down the barrier of what really art is. I think there's still a lot of stigma that art is stiff or it's not for, you know, folks of color, you know,
right. It's intimidating. Or people under certain income brackets.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
which is not true.
Right. You see an art piece on the wall that's like, you know, maybe $2,000 and you're like, you know, why is this $2,000? My son could have done this. Why is it on a big wall in an art gallery? Why is there so much importance and provenance made around this piece? And so, you know, there's something to breaking those things down and also giving much more freedom to how people express themselves around art. Cause there's a lot to gather around art that really gives people much more leverage to be creative, much more leverage to develop critical thinking skills. And it's really, I think, the core piece of what we need in really growing our economy in a way that is going to be useful for everyone, because art mm-hmm. does involve culture. And it also involves a level of kind of appreciation for what's there, because there is some thought around like history, you know, there's preservation when it comes to art. So,
of course,
So that's kind of like the deeper level of what, you know, what our mission is in making this available all over the world, you know, to folks who speak different languages, to, you know, to young and old, to really have thought provoking conversations around art. What does it mean to them? And then using that in building the value for the work. And then you realize the value, because we need to know why it is even valuable to begin with before we can say, okay, yeah, you're right, that is valuable. And yes, I do want to keep it. And yes, I want to hold it for generations because I know the importance of this piece.
Right. And I think specifically with our culture is like, we already love art. You know, sneakers are art. We love sneakers. Video games are art. We love video games. I mean, logos are art, right? Like this True Detergent. This is a Black owned detergent company that I work with. That's art, logos. And so we just have to kind of stop looking at art as just like one dimensional for certain things that we just like ourselves and look at it in like three dimensions or four dimensions. Because like you say, not only does art make a lot of money, but it also shows the culture of like where you are psychologically. Like when I walk in somebody's house mm-hmm. and I see they have certain pieces, I can get a kind of a good idea of that person's personality or mindset, right? And then there's different art in different rooms. Like the living room has certain art, mm-hmm. the kitchen, the, you know, basement, bedrooms, everything has different types of art. And I respect when I see that also. And so my thing is, if you you look at even gentrified neighborhoods, it went from us hating graffiti to us loving murals, right? So if you go in any emerging area of the country, areas that were like crazy graffiti that, you know, kind of was like graffiti that we didn't like. Now there's all graffiti artists that are sanctioned by these cities or towns or whatever you want to call it to do murals, and people love it. We love seeing that. Like when you go to, you know, someplace in LA, Chicago, New York, Atlanta, you know, and you go to Miami and the Wynwood District and, you know, even Harlem and just places that I've been, and I'm like, man, I love to see different types of art in these emerging areas. And then I think it does give the kids and the community appreciation, and it shows the culture.
Definitely.
Like if you go to the Bronx, you know, you go to, you know, Hispanic neighborhood, you see different type of art. Then when you come to Harlem or Bed-Stuy, you see different type of art. Then when you go to the white community, you see different type of art. And I just think that, you know, what you're doing, your platform, once it actually starts to scale, it's going to be huge because people are going to have a better appreciation for it. And then they don't have to leave their houses to really enjoy it or experience it. They can do it from an app, which I know you said the app is coming, and you could tell the story on, you know, where the app is or where it's going to be and the website. And so for you to have two different vehicles that you can use to utilize your service, I think is pretty dope.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. And one other thing, just to
put that thing on vibrate, brother.
I know. I apologize.
It's cool, man.
One thing that you brought up in murals and you know, a local identity, you know, when you go to the Bronx versus you go to LA versus you go to, you know, London and you see the work, and especially with sort of neighborhoods, you know, Black neighborhoods, you know, because a lot of the graffiti came from the gang culture, right? And so now that you have these murals, so artists are going from sort of the graffiti to doing these larger murals. And what happens...
Because they've grown too. They've grown. I said they've grown, right?
Yeah, they have. And what's interesting is when you have an artist who belongs maybe to a gang or that community, and they do a piece, the community knows and they protect it,
right?
Because they know it's somebody from their neighborhood,
right?
You know, that they saw, grew up, you know, drawing and creating, and it's like it really provides
they a saw sense the evolution. Of
like, yeah,
right.
And you know, it's yeah, it's really important. It's really important.
And their purpose changed too. It's like they repurposed it from, you know, gang or... And my thing is, like, I know some artists that were graffiti artists young, and they weren't necessarily in gangs. They just like spray painting creative stuff on trains and walls and, you know, abandoned buildings and stuff like that. But some of their stuff actually wasn't gang inspired. And their stuff was just like some young kid who just was finding a way to express themselves. So you have both of those. You have the kid who is in the gang and, you know, they're doing whatever the gang artists do, graffiti writers. And then you have the ones who were just strictly hip hop. Like, you know, I'm a break dancer. Mm-hmm. I'm a B-boy, you know, like Fat Joe, you know, he was a B-boy, but he also, you know, had some other stuff going, but he used to write graffiti. K-Slate used to write graffiti, you know, and they just evolved into, you know, these artists that we know about and we respect and we enjoy their art, whether it's music or it's visual. Like Chris Brown, he's a great artist. From what I saw his work, the stuff that he does, it looks pretty elaborate and it looks very creative. And who would think that this guy who can sing and dance, he's also a great artist too. I mean, that's probably just a trifecta. But, you know, like I said, I just think for me, I never had this type of vehicle when I was growing up where I would have a website or an app where I can experience art even if I wanted to. And so for you to be at the forefront of that, kind of like what you saw at Afrotech with the conference that's going on now, you see that they have a virtual art gallery or virtual art tour. And so, you know, you guys were around probably before they even knew about it. You know, it would have been nice for you to be able to take part of that or be a part of that experience. And I'm sure that'll be something that you can look at doing moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that we would love to introduce to Blavity and Afrotech
and other conferences too.
Sure. Know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, more importantly, it's building the momentum, you know, knowing that we exist and that this is what we're out to do. And And, you know, I mean, this has been definitely a journey for me for many years, because I've always been in the arts. You know, I mean, I've started out, like, dance was my first love, and then I went to animation, and then I dabbled into some fine art myself, and then mm-hmm. I developed my my commercial design business, and then you know, now moved to this. And so much of my journey has been around, like, what actually creates more value for art, not just for me, for the people that I'm around, and going, you know, going one step further, and seeing how many more people I can impact, to share, you know, what my true essence is, which is just the love of creativity and expression.
Do you think there would be like a, and this is maybe getting off track a little bit, but as far as features of the app or the website, do you think there'll be a component where, like, a kid who doesn't have access to art materials will have access to the internet, where they can do like a drawing or a painting on the site and get that printed out in real life, right? It's like you can get it shipped to them, or they can send it to somebody else, or people can go through the gallery and say, I like this, I might want to get an original painting, or I want to get this piece put on my wall in my home or my business, mm-hmm. and I want to pay for it. You think mm-hmm. that'll be something that you guys can maybe try to institute?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's definitely possible. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still a lot of opportunity in growing the arts education piece and features, tools that we want to empower. Right now, you know, our key stake is in empowering the artist. You know,
okay.
For many millennials, you know, the way in which the artist can create value for their work is usually on someone else's heels, whether it is in the gallery or it is in the museum,
and now auctions.
Auctions, exactly. And now you are seeing a shift. You know, especially in technology, there's been unfortunately a drop in the amount of art galleries, especially now with COVID. You know, brick and mortars. Museums are going to be, if museums don't get their act together soon, if they don't develop a technical web strategy, they're going to go out too. You know, there was an article, I don't know if it was on New York Times or something, but it was like 1/3 of museums are going to have to be shut down in the next year, because, you know, you have a lot of museums that are private funded. Some are state, right? So the government pays for that.
But their budget is going to be cut dramatically.
Yeah, their budget is going to be cut. But so you have, you know, you're going to have a big, well, what I call, it's an a huge opportunity to leverage a solution for people who are wanting to engage, re-engage their audience in a way that provides value for the work that they already have.
Do you think there could be like an RFP you can do for states who plan on cutting budgets to where, say, for instance, well, a lot of kids aren't going to class, but I'm saying is, say, if they do have kids that are in the classroom, there would be like a way that you can use like maybe their big projector screen or whatever apparatus they have to sit. I don't even know if they can do this now because of COVID, but like instead of going to a museum, because the museum's either shut down or the budget's cut. Because I like those trips. I like the field trips. Like being from Chicago, man, we have some great museums. And then living in New York, great museums. Atlanta has a great aquarium, right? And some other museums too, right? Because, you know, Atlanta's growing, sprawling city. But it's like, if they can sit in that room, the lights get cut off, and they do like a virtual art tour, you know, through, like I said, a projection screen or some huge, you know, flat screen TV that they have. I think that'll be a great RFP, even for the Zoom students. You know, were they doing their lessons of the day on Zoom, like a lot of kids are now? If they do have an art experience, and it kind of, I think, will reduce their anxiety, or it'll give them like some type of creative outlet while they're living this abnormal, you know, reality that we have right now. And I think the kids will walk away from, you know, those lesson plans throughout the day if there's like a virtual art experience incorporated in that, feeling a little bit better other than just being straight academia.
Right. Yeah. And you know, and there's been studies that are proven when you mix creativity, mm-hmm. I mean, it is in some way in academia, but when you mix the left and the right brain, you mm-hmm. know, when you actually put those things together, you can form much more solid
individuals
and awareness. And so I highly encourage, you know, I mean, schools to be doing that. Obviously, it's again why we want to share this with the education system, because it's vital for.
No, I just thought about something too. I didn't mean to cut you off, but a friend of mine who's from Chicago, who was a graffiti artist, who has a Obie Award-winning design company here in Atlanta for doing constructions on different people's homes who are like, you know, high net worth homes. His name is BJ Kerr. He actually went to an Ivy League school for design, and he started off as a graffiti writer.
Wow.
The Modern Craftsman. If you ever look on Instagram, his name is The Modern Craftsman. I call him the TBT King because not only was he, you know, going to school, but he also got involved in the music business, and he has some of the best TBTs ever with like Janet Jackson and Tupac and like artistic people. But then he ended up designing one of the most well-known studios where musicians came to record their music. He designed a studio called Patchwork Studios in Atlanta.
Wow.
So look at how far, you know, art can take somebody if they just pointed in the right direction.
Exactly.
From the South Side of Chicago in the hood to Ivy League University to design a studio to award-winning homes.
Exactly. No, and that's beautiful. And more kids need to know this. They need to know that this type of thing exists because, you know, I'm pretty blessed that I did have parents that supported my my artistic career.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, they were like, well, you still need to, you know, you still need to have a job. And you know, we don't want you to be the starving artist, you know?
Right.
I want to kill that idea because in this day and age, the artist is going to have a big advantage.
You watch Billions?
No, I've someone told me about it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, there's a show called Billions. I've
seen it
on HBO or Showtime. But there's an artist on there that these billionaires commission to do works, and they buy all his stuff up front, or they try to tell him, listen, create this type of piece for me. I'm gonna give you a space to create it,
sure.
And they commission him to do works. And this guy isn't starving at all. Matter of fact, most artists that I know, if they really have talent and they have access to people who do buy art, they do pretty well for themselves.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, art is another form of business. And so you mm-hmm. do need to know, like, how do you actually value art? You know,
mm-hmm.
how do you monetize that in a way that actually is going to give you every time you do a design is going to give you more and more leverage to make you more money. And the great thing is that there's so many things out in the world now that give that extra leverage. You know, there's ways to do prints and mm-hmm. put them on, you know, from t-shirts to towels. And, you know, if you want to do it that way, and you've got Instagram that gives you the ability to market to, you know, the whole world to say, hey, buy my piece, as opposed to being in an art gallery or even in a museum or, you know,
right
now. So it now it's just getting, having all those resources in a way that provides that extra value that the people that the audience see in order for that work all the to go up. And then every time they sell a piece, and in my world, we want that system where when they do sell a piece, they're always going to get a cut of that piece, meaning
mm-hmm.
it's a royalty at this point. Just
right.
like a musician has royalty,
right.
artists
right.
can get a royalty on their work. It's
right.
totally possible,
right.
And it gives the artist again confidence, resources, and leverage to keep creating, keep designing, keep building on that on their ideas. And you know, that's what we want.
Yeah, I'm gonna hook you up. I bought a piece of art from this store in Greenbrier Mall, in like
What's
Southwest Greenbrier Mall. It's a store. It's an art store in Greenbrier Mall, right? Which is, you know, know, in the Southwest area of Atlanta. And there's an African art store. I'm looking up the name of it now. I think it's called like African Treasures or Densua's Closet or something like that. But man, what was one of the dopest things I've seen, which is why we kind of need to, you know, do business in our own areas, which was they have a store inside the mall, but then there's a Macy's, right? Mm-hmm. There is a Macy's, and they also have a store on the furniture level of Macy's. And they had it at Perimeter Mall, and then they had, they showed, I think they closed that one, but they had it in Greenbrier Mall too. And I just thought that was dope because I've never seen a black owned art store inside of a major department store. Mm-hmm. And it's been there for like 20 or 30 years.
Right.
So I'm going to hook you up with them. Next time I go in, I'm going to give them your information. I'll give you their information. And maybe that can be another opportunity for you and your website. Because they have some really nice pieces, man. I mean, it's amazing the stuff that I see in there. Like, mm-hmm. I want to really spend some real money in there when I get the chance, mm-hmm. because they have some pieces I haven't seen anywhere else.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate that. I really do.
Yeah. Well, you know, Black Tech Matters is not just about the conversations. It's about the actions, right?
Yeah.
And so it's about Black Tech companies, Black Tech founders, matters within Black Tech, but it's also about Black technical movement, Black technical thought when it comes to social issues and business too.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal is not only to, you know, have conversations with people, you know, that I find like I like what they're doing, but it's also to try to help the business too, if I can.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, like I said, I mean, I totally appreciate that. You know, and again, bring me onto the show. You know, this is something that we're very passionate about, and we want to see everybody have access to more art, quality mm-hmm. art, and quality conversations about art. More important,
right? And let me know if I'm leaving anything out, because I'm not an expert. I tell people all the time, I'm not an expert in any of these particular fields that I talk to people about. I'm always willing to learn, and if you feel like I'm leaving something out regarding the art space, or if there's something that I miss, I mean, educate me and educate, you know, the listeners as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would just say, you know, go to our website, you know, check out the work, listen to.
What is the website?
So it's .red.co. So dotre.co.
And make sure you send me the link too, so I can post the link.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at that. Yeah. Yeah. So, so you can see right now it's one exhibition. We're programming it where it's sort of one exhibition at a time, and then we, you know, we'll continue to scale. And as we see what's working and what's not for the audience, and different features.
And let the people know what you need. Like, is there anything that you as a company or you as a founder that you need as far as resources or whatever would help your company out? Because I know you said you kind of, you know, you had a CTO and the CTO mm-hmm. kind of left because of COVID.
Yeah.
So tell us what's going on with that.
I mean, we are in the pursuit of another technical team member. Mm-hmm. And actually, with being at Afrotech, I mean, there's quite a good pool of resources that we are engaging with. But that is something, more importantly, is just feedback. We just want to know what people think. Like, just give us your honest, candid feedback. We have a feedback form in the website, and we just want to know what you think. Because if you give us your thoughts, that will enable, you know, our team and myself and to develop new ways of bringing a better experience to the audience and giving more value to the artwork, giving more value to the artists. So we would love your feedback.
Yeah, I'm going to go check it out. I've been on the website, you know, once or twice myself already, but send me like a, you know, oh, it's called Densua's African Treasures, Greenbrier Mall. Densua's African Treasures.
Well, after this, what we'll do is we'll share, you can share that,
that link.
Writing it down.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. And then you send me a link to you guys next exhibition, because I definitely want to be a part of and be involved. And if I see something I like, it'll probably end up on the wall.
Awesome, man.
Are you guys using any type of crowdfunding?
You know what? We're not right now.
Okay.
We're not. And it's definitely a possibility. You know, in my previous conversations with some advisors, we wanted to keep it a little bit more private, just because we were trying to find out, you know, what was going to be the best strategy of, you know, who our audience member was, you know, who were we really attracting, and then start targeting those customers. customers, businesses to use the site and grow from there.
Okay, fair enough. Like I said, I always just try to come up with different ideas, different strategies. I think that, you know, Black founders need to be each other's brain trust. You know, we need to help each other share information as long as it isn't anything that's, you know, competitive or proprietary. Because of course there's boundaries to business discussions. And I appreciate you coming on the show or coming on the podcast. And like I said, we always have great conversations anyway. There's a very supportive, I think, group that we have, and I appreciate being a part of it.
Yeah, man, me too. And I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your candidness. You know, you always are able to give a fresh look at what's going on, and you're not afraid to share what you think. You know, and I think in this growing, at least in tech, you know, our opinions really matter. They're important. And beyond that, it's actually constructive. You know, so it's actually constructive so that we can actually get the information, get the right information, and actually use it. You know, and that's what I really appreciate about this, and something that, you know, the Black community needs to continue to grow upon is having really constructive conversations with each other. It's not competitive. It's all in the love of support.
Right.
You know,
good
for
faith.
Each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good faith, outreach, you know? Support, and understanding.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Well, Jeremy,
yeah,
as always, great talking to you. I look forward to getting the email invite or the email. I don't know what platform you use, but I don't care. To join the exhibition, excuse me. And just we can follow up, man, in 6 months. And like I said, whatever you need, if I can help, just let me know.
Will do, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate
all right.
It. Thank
Have
you.
A great enjoy LA. I'll be out there hopefully within I don't know when, but I'm really want to come back to. I haven't been to LA in a little bit over a year, and I'm just like, I'd have to get back to LA, man. I just want.
Well,
to
when you
there.
Come to LA, you let me know. You definitely have a someone who will take you. I'll do it. I'll give you a tour. You know,
okay.
The city. What's new? What's old? And
okay.
Definitely some art.
Yeah, we could do some business too, because I don't like just traveling for fun. I like traveling for business as well as fun. So,
all right, well, let's do it. Let's make that money.
All right, let's put it together. All right, brother, you have a good day.
Thank you for listening to the Black Tech Matters podcast. We hope you enjoy. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Black Tech Matters 2 and on Twitter at Black Tech Matters.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.